Yes. The Mishnah tells us in Yuma that Yom Kippur is not mechater for Aveiro Shalom Mechavero Ad Shei Rotzes Havero. That apparently Yom Kippur is not going to work unless you obtain the mechila from others who you have offended. And that's a pretty big statement because we have so many mitzvot that apply during this time of year. We have shofar, we have fasting, we have lulav and esrog and sukkah and the like. And to state that the whole Yom Kippur is not going to kick in is a pretty big concept that we have here, that we need to be forgiven, kind of affects the whole rest of our lives too. And to say that it's all contingent upon this particular responsibility, that's a pretty huge deal. And the first step of understanding just how huge a deal it is, we have to try to understand what does it mean when it says Yom Kippur doesn't work. So on the simplest level, it sounds like it means that Yom Kippur is not going to atone for those averos. And the averos that you have done against other people, Yom Kippur is not going to be mechaper for those without the consent of the victim. And I don't know if that seems obvious, or maybe it seems very mechudish, because the fact is, ultimately, the source of the Aveira, the source of the Azhara, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you could have imagined that God maintains bias over the whole story and says, you're not allowed to punch your friend in the nose. And if you do, you have violated God's Torah. And therefore, God will decide by himself whether or not you're off the hook. So the idea to make it contingent upon the agreement of the victim, I don't know whether you would consider that obvious, you consider that very mechudish. I could see one coming from both directions. On the one hand, okay, he's the victim. On the other hand, he's only the victim because God decided that there is such a victimization. And to say that he has some control over this process might be a big mechudish that we appreciate. And in fact, there are those who suggest that that's actually the issue here, the fact that there are two Bible, that there is the victim and there is the Kodesh Baruch. And you really need to do tshuva on both angles. Prima Gadim quotes such a perspective. Kodesh quotes such a perspective from Shmuel Germaisen, if I remember correctly, that not only does the victim maintain a claim on you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm also the victim, because I told you not to do this, and I'm not going to be much more chelek until the human victim is mochel his fit. And then there are those who go even further. And the Vilna Gaon, for example, had a very sweeping understanding, where the Vilna Gaon wrote that Yom Kippur is not mechaper on anything, Ad Sheirat says Chaver. But unless you get your friend to ask you for, to grant you mechila, the whole package deal is not going to come from. And that's a particularly difficult idea to understand. Why should your whole process of tshuva on Yom Kippur be wrapped up in getting mechila for the averus that you did on Mechaver? So, in order to examine this a little bit more, so let's posit the question, what exactly are we trying to obtain with mechila? What exactly is it that we want the person to do for us? So, on the surface, you'd probably say it sounds like pressing charges and dropping charges, right? That in American law, certain crimes, below a certain threshold, if you commit them against someone else, so the victim has the right to press charges or to drop the charges. So if he presses charges, you're in trouble. If you drop the charges, you're off the hook. So maybe the idea is here that you need the victim to drop the charges. But if that's the case, then what would the story be if the victim somehow transmitted the message that he's Michael without you asking? What do you think? What should the story be then? Let's say somehow you knew the person was Michael and you didn't ask.
Charges are dropped.
Okay, what do you think? No, you agree? Disagree?
Yeah, I disagree. I think there's
want to punch him in the nose?
Yeah. Because there has to be some sort of component that's about the person that's asking the issue as well, and not just about the person that needs the credit.
Okay, so the truth is, as with everything, this is machlokas, a number of posts can took up this question, but there does seem to be ample evidence that there's more to it than just the individual granting the chila. If that were the case, we'd have some other easy avenues because, for example, on Erev and Kippur, if you're able to get to shul on time, so there is a chila called Chila Zaka, which is written by the author of the Chai Adam, and there are a couple of advantages to being able to say this chila, but included within its text is the phrase that you're mochel anybody who did anything to you. If they owe you money, you're not being mochel that, you stole the money. But in terms of the offense to go, you are mochel all of that. And to go further, the Gemara says in the Gila, it's Rav Zeira, when he would go to sleep at night, he would say, Asharaleh, the Koman, I forgive anyone who did anything against me. So maybe if you're smart and efficient, you'll pick your victims carefully and you'll make sure only to offend people who say Tfilah Zaka, or even better, who every night when they go to sleep they say this nusach that they forgive everyone. Good point, right? So you could save yourself the time in asking for mechila. So it's also interesting to ask, yes sir?
Is that the same thing as Hamapil?
So with the nusach they wrote that in Hamapil itself, but in the whole Kriya Shema Lamita package, so you find that line there as well. So some say this, some don't. If you know that your victims are the ones who say this, boom, saves you some time there from Kippur. So does that follow? I mean, the truth is you could distinguish, right? You could say that, listen, these general formulas are nice, whatever they accomplish, but maybe we're not willing to rely on that. But a specific act that I did to somebody, if I happen to know that he's mindful, so maybe indeed that could be enough. So then you point to a Gemara in Zahazuma, where the Gemara tells the story of Rav, who got into an episode with a certain butcher. We won't go into all the gory details, it doesn't end well. But the Gemara says that Rav gave this butcher a chance to apologized to him, and therefore was kind of hanging around his neighborhood, making himself available for a request of Mechila. Yeritzala Pettenberger, have you spoken about him recently? Right, so Yitzchak Blazer, the Talmud of Rishol Salanter, so he, I forgot why we spoke about him recently. Okay, for some reason we spoke about him recently. So he has essay about this in a Sefer Kotzvei Or, where he points out that this, that this is an example of Halach the Madracha, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes himself available now, so there's some Yeshua. The Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Birsho Shem B'Matzo K'ru Oso B'Yoso K'ro, you should call out to God when he is nearby. And the Gemara says, "Elu Asar Sayyamim Shabbat Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur." So these 10 days that are between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, so that's the time when God makes Himself more available, so we can do tshuva more easily. So Rav is apparently imitating this as a fulfillment of Halach and Jaffa. Yes, and you know, I spoke about this. So that was his approach. So the Sfarim asks, "Well, still, that's nice, but why didn't he save himself some time and just send out a memo to his mother? Or what's the need to exert himself for this purpose if he'd rather be mindful than just be mindful?" So this seems to go to Noah's point, that there's something more here. That it's not just that you need the claims dropped, although maybe that's a part of it too, maybe there's both components, but there's something more. And they tell a joke about yeshiva guys, no offense. I mean, I realize there are jokes about yeshiva guys, but they tell a joke about yeshiva guys that they know that when they put sugar and stir it into their coffee, that the coffee becomes sweeter. But they're not sure exactly how it works. Is it that the sugar makes the coffee sweeter? Or is it really the stir? Now, what's the sugar there for? Because when the sugar dissolves, then you know that you've stirred enough. It's a shear. So you could ask the same question here. So yes, we know there's a process. You ask Mechila, and the person grants you Mechila. So is the idea that you need to get his Mechila? Or is the idea that you need to go through the process of asking? And then, if he gives you the Mechila, that shows you that you did the process properly. So how could you perhaps see that that might be the case? The second side, the joke half of the side by becomes the coffee. So how, why is that possibly the case here?
Yes, that you don't really, you want to get mechila from Hashem, not necessarily the person. In order to, I mean, was there a day that said you just have to get mechila from Hashem, but really the person does not have a time on him?
Well, not that I actually said that, but that we speculated that. Mishnah says for sure you have to ask him.
Right.
We were asking a few minutes ago, is that obvious or is that a big fish? Because if you make an argument for both, if you make an argument that it's obvious, that the victim clearly has to forgive. But you can say that it's a fish because maybe there is no actual bias for the victim. It's all an offense against God, and if God hadn't prohibited it, there wouldn't be such a concept. And maybe you could have made a case that there's no real intuitive need for the victim to be involved. And the Mishnah that tells us this is a chiddush. That's what we mentioned. Practically speaking, we know that we need to ask for mechila. So what you're suggesting here is that maybe in a finale, maybe it's still all about the offense against God. But this is what he was kaveya. He was kaveya that the way you do tshuva ben adam l'makom for the Avera ben Adam l'chavero is through the process of asking the mechila. Now that could be true. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I don't know if this helps at all. I was thinking that, you know, you're supposed to ask the person three times instead of asking the third time, whatever. So I think it kind of has both, because if it was just the process, then seemingly asking would have been enough, but you clearly just need some part, but we'd like to get some part of the person actually involved. So you ask three times, but if they're not going to do it, then fine. You can't get that aspect of it, maybe get the other aspect.
See, it's interesting. That din is important. I was going to mention that, but I think it's actually arrived for a guy that's a if you ask him 3 times, he'll tell you. That let's focus on these two dinim for a second, because I think these two dinim kind of show that there is a focus on the process completely apart from the result. One is what we just mentioned, that even if you get the result without the process, so still there seems to be an issue to ask anyway. So that focuses on the process as important. And the other side of the equation displays itself in the din that Tamir just mentioned, right? So the din in Shulchan Aruch, if you saw this morning, it appears there, that if the person declines the give you forgiveness, then you have to ask again. And then try again and again until you try 3 times. And if you try 3 times and you don't have success, so then that's enough and you're off the hook. So the truth is, if it's about obtaining mechila, so where would you find this in any other area of life? Imagine if you want to borrow your father's car. So you ask him, he says no. Then you ask him again, he says no. Then you ask him a third time, he says no. Then it becomes okay. The other rabbit becomes los achmo. You're not supposed to keep asking somebody for something they don't want to give you. So where else in the world do you have this idea that if you need something from someone, that if you shepherd them so many times and they say no, all of a sudden three times no turns into a yes? That's not a cloud anywhere else. So what that seems to highlight, if you'll forgive me, but I mean, I saw that one was an unspoken comment here, that seems to highlight the opposite, maybe. That this, again, it fits in with the joke side of the coffee thing here, right? That the purpose of obtaining the nefilah is like the purpose of the sugar dissolving, according to that second side. You're not really looking at the sugar. The sugar, when it dissolves, that shows you that you have stirred correctly. So too, under normal circumstances, if you go through a process that is effective, the fact that the person gives you mechila, that shows that you did an appropriate job. That shows that you did it effectively. So that might mean approaching three times. And here you see it's not like they teach you, not to teach you, not, I don't want to be one teacher. It's not like the impression you get in elementary school, where I think kids learn this in elementary school, so they go up to people and say, okay, okay, it's your problem. So that's not how it works. But we're talking about three separate approaches, each time trying something different. You bring flowers, you bring chocolate, you beg, you cry, whatever it takes to win the person over. And then if you have three legitimate efforts and still not happening, so then, okay, we could say you went through the process. So, what's the purpose of this process? What exactly is it that we're trying to accomplish? So, yes, no?
We're trying to get the person to actually recognize the severity of what they've done. And
okay.
By creating a process that has kind of strict rules for gaining the love, the person has more time to really introspect and think about what he's done.
Okay, that's interesting. I think that is certainly a part of Dr. Hachuba. There are those who suggest that there's another component of the change process that is being highlighted here. That the fact that here a person is willing to sin against someone else, so that generally indicates some degree of arrogance, some degree of feeling superior to the other party. And now to have to come in a submissive way, to come hat in hand, and to say, I was wrong, I need you to forgive me. So that's a complete inversion of that nida. The Gemara has a statement in Masechus Brachos, which Shlomo Worman points out. The Gemara has a lashon that call ha'usa davar aveira in the spayish, boifamo, that somebody does an aveira and is embarrassed about the aveira, so he is forgiven. Right, so far, so good. I think we could relate to that. But the kicker is the rest of the sentence. Mofumo al kola v'rosav. He's forgiven for everything. That seems a little bit too generous, right? So you should be forgiven for this aveira because you feel the sense of embarrassment. Why should you be forgiven for everything? So the suggestion seems to be that the humiliation or the sense of submission, that's a part of the process of tshuva. And if you put yourself through that process, so then that deserves to come with a kapara. That should have an atonement that comes along with it. I think I once saw I forgot what sefer we're looking at, saw a commentary in the name of a kind of lashon. It was printed in one of the journals I had in the library. That, you know, the famous Mishnah at the end of our Masechet, to give a little synergy here, in the end of Masechet's Kedushin. So, God willing, you won't get that far because you're all learning the whole Masechta. So, you know the famous Mishnah, which is a big kasha, and all the Jewish mothers who are so proud of their son, the doctor. Right, so, what does the Mishnah say? Tov shviro from Gehenna. The best of the doctors destined for Gehenna. It's obviously a challenging statement. Again, we're so proud of the doctors among us. So why would we have such a statement? So there's obviously many interpretations. Reb Chaim Volozhiner suggested interpretation in a whole different sense. He said that it's a spiritual reference, talking about spiritual healing. So the most effective refuah a person can go through on a spiritual level is to be embarrassed. And that brings a total kapara. So that's the total shed the refuahs. But who's the Rofe who's going to administer such a healing? Have to be a Rasha, right? To be a Javera, to embarrass people in public. So on the one hand, this is the best Rafua, but the Tosh Shiva Rofe, on the one hand, the one who's going to give this medicine is going to get himself in a lot of trouble. So too, there is this recognition that going through a process of submission is something that is effective from a tshuva perspective, and perhaps that's what we're talking about. So this could perhaps explain a few other things. There is a notion that, for example, when we talk about how to go about asking from the chila. I remember a few years ago, around this time of year, on the cover of one of the Jewish newspapers, it was a blurb. You have to look like you're current, like you're up to date. So there was a cover statement. Can you ask Mechila through email? So the truth is, it's not a new shayla. Email is a new twist, but the question of asking Mechila through letters or through emissaries, through shlichim, is a question that was dealt with a long time ago by Poskim. And they're not so thrilled with it. So why are they not so thrilled with it? Because maybe a part of the process is supposed to be this face-to-face confrontation. And if you are reducing the impact of that confrontation, something is missing from the experience. I think everyone would agree that if the only way you can approach someone is through a letter or through an emissary, so then for sure that's far, far better than nothing. And often that'll be the case if there's such a frost between the two people. The only way to break the ice is with that first step. I don't think anyone would say that that's not a legitimate first step. The question is that the whole package? So is there still more to be done? So that seems to be the case. That's what most of us post can assume, that even if you get the shliach to come back with a signed waiver of claims, that's not going to be enough, that there really should be a face-to-face interaction, which is really the greater purpose of Mechila. Hello.
What if the interaction isn't so much embarrassing, but more awkward?
Yes, well, what is awkward based on, though? Where does awkwardness come from?
What would the awkwardness be? Well, let's say it was...
No, what is awkwardness about? What makes you feel awkward?
It's somebody that you just don't want to see.
Why not? It's awkward. Well, what I'm trying to get at is that awkwardness and embarrassment, like the way we're trying to explain awkwardness, are kind of linked. You feel awkward because you feel some embarrassment. You know, so when you say when you have an interaction with somebody and you say, oh, that was awkward, well, what made it awkward? Possibly because something happened between the two of you beforehand to make it uncomfortable, or because the way things came out, it's pretty much connected to a sense of maybe a mild embarrassment, but it's within the embarrassment spectrum. That's the idea, that going through that is maybe a part of the tshuva process, and maybe that's what we're talking about. And you find, for example, in some svarim that the Magon talks about, that another possibility, if the victim is not willing to be meichel, so you find some discussion of gathering a minion of 10 and saying in front of the minion, I sinned against this person and I want to do tshuva for it, so I'm hereby declaring that. So what good is that? Again, if you need to get something from somebody, so to go to our previous example, if you want to borrow your father's car and he says no, so then I don't know if he's going to appreciate it too much if you get 10 neighbors to stand down the street corner and say, I hereby ask you guys to give me the car. Right? That's not going to go over very well. the idea seems to be that part of the process is really meant to be somewhat of a humbling experience. And if you go through that, then that's not maybe the best route, but it might at least be an alternate route. So in that context, there's a discussion, this idea of gathering 10. So what's the purpose of 10? The Aruch HaShulchan says that you want to evoke the Shechina, and that's where you get a minyan from. But others understand that, the Ben Ishchai is a tshuva like this, that it's not necessarily about the Shechina, but it's for publicity purposes. That the whole point is, if the victim's not going to be there to give you mechila, so you want to at least get people to know about it, so you gather together 10 people, which then might not necessarily mean 10 men. It might mean women included, because the purpose is publicity. We may have different definitions as to what constitutes a minyan. Okay, so far so good? So this gives us basically two schools of thought as to what the purpose of Mechila is. Is the purpose of Mechila to get a waiver of claims? Or is the purpose of Mechila to go through a process of, we'll call it awkwardness, in order to help the tshuva fully form? And maybe that's what's going on. So, there is a third approach as well. And that approach could be especially crucial. And keep in mind that one of the questions that we also have to try to figure out is, why do we find there's an Indian asking Mechila, so to what extent is Mechila a general concept that's relevant at any time we hurt somebody? And to what extent is it connected specifically to Yom Kippur? So it could be that the idea of asking Mechila, especially as a process that one has to go through, is that maybe getting a waiver of claims is not enough, but that part of the process is necessary in order to fix the relationship. And maybe that's what's so crucial on Yom Kippur. That when it comes to Yom Kippur, we need to get Mechila for everything else that we've done. And it's a little bit of an uphill battle, perhaps, a little bit of a hard sell. And there's a statement in the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. It says that when the defense attorneys up in Shemayim are pleading our case, so they say, Ribono Shel Olam, we should have rachmanis on the Jews. Look how holy they are. Look how angelic they are. And among our angelic qualities is just like the angels aren't fighting amongst themselves, So too, the Jews are not fighting amongst themselves either. So, halavai, that should only be true. But that seems to be something that we desire, something that we're putting before us as a goal, that in order for our case to be stronger and kipper, we have to be as one unit. So therefore, if that's the case, maybe the idea of asking from the chila isn't just that whatever is on our cheshbon that somebody else has control over has to be undone, but that maybe the idea is also that we have to actually repair the damage. That if we have hurt someone, so then they are suffering, and it's necessary for us to fix the damage. And to that end, it's been pointed out that the idea of asking for Mechila actually appears in two Mishnayos. One is the Mishnah that we mentioned in Yom Kippur, is not Mechaper, actually Rotze Es Avero. And then, separate from that, for those who are learning Daf Yomi, so there's a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, on Daf Tzadi Beis, so that was a little more than 3 months ago. When the Mishnah says that if you're chovel b'chaveiro, if you wound somebody, so you have to pay all the different tashlumins that we find, and you also have to ask for nachi. So it seems there are two separate dinim of asking for mechila. But one of Baba Kama, that's there to say that you have to get a release of claims. The point of the Mishnah in Yuma is focusing on something else, and that's also why it connects specifically to Yom Kippur. And it's saying that separate from the question of whether the individual drops the charges, there's still the question also of fixing the emotional damage. And that needs to happen because if there's tension between us on Yom Kippur, then Yom Kippur is not going to be effective. And in fact, if some sofer wrote in his drasha that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was less of a need to ask for mechila because we had the karbanos that brought us all together. So when we had the Beis HaMikdash and the Seder HaKarbanos as a unifying force, then mechila wasn't so much of a necessity. But without that to bring us together, when there is interpersonal tension, so then we have to address that, and that's what mechila is meant to accomplish. Tamir.
What about something like Lashon Hara, which you could hurt the person, but they don't, are not aware of it, so there's no...
All right, so now the question is, so you're opening up a huge topic, which we start the topic, I'm happy to talk about it, it's a fascinating topic. Question is, if we want to get to Mincha today after our home room, so I don't know if we'll get to it. I'm happy to talk about it one of the days that we have after today, or you know, we'll see if we have time after Parsha tomorrow to start something new. But let's first lay out some details and then we'll possibly come back to that. Because it's really a topic of equal length for the whole rest of the time. So the question of how exactly to fix these relationships is not always so simple. So that may also explain why we tie this to Yom Kippur. We mean two things. One, that this needs to be done before Yom Kippur because it's a part of the Yom Kippur experience. But also, maybe sometimes there's even a svara to wait. Because we know that often when emotions are high, it's not possible to fix things right away. And that's Mishnah in Perkiolos. Right? Mishnah says, "Ein meratzin schaveru b'shas kaiso." And if we're looking for a ritzu here, we're looking for appeasement. So you can't necessarily always accomplish that when the person is still very freshly upset. So in order to actually get this done, you may have to wait a little bit, and perhaps that's what's suggested here, that you look to Yom Kippur as the deadline, but if you hurt somebody on Simchas Torah, then it's, I guess, good timing. You have 50 weeks to try to find the right moment that you can fix the damage and have Yom Kippur actually atone. So within this perspective, you can see also why there's a chiyuv on both parties. And why it's not just that you have to ask for mechila, but it's really appropriate for the victim to grant mechila when the process has been an honest process. And this is also discussed in that same Mishnah of Baba Kama. The Mishnah says that it's not appropriate for a person who's been on the receiving end of the offense to be an achzar, to be somebody who's cruel, and to refuse to give mechila. And some start talking even about the victim making the first move, which is similar to the story we started with about Rav. So why should the victim make the first move? He didn't do anything wrong. So perhaps the issue is not just that you need to have the charges dropped, but also that you need to smooth over the problems, you need to fix the tensions, and therefore, even if you are the victim, there might be a place for you to have responsibility there. The Mishnah, as it appears in the Babli, says that one should not be an achzar. Remember correctly, as it appears in the Rishali, says you shouldn't be a chote, you shouldn't be a sinner, suggesting it's actually an avera not to be mochel someone. Now, there is literature about that, discusses the question of, do we actually treat it like an avera? So, for example, let's say somebody takes a shvua, which you can imagine somebody doing. If somebody takes a shvua, never forgive somebody who did something to them. So do we call that a shvua la'avra al divrei Torah? Is it a shvua against the Torah? Therefore, it shouldn't take effect? Or do you see that as somehow technically a possible type of shvua? It's a discussion of Rishon. Or what if, there's also something you can imagine, what if there's a family feud in the Hatfield and McCoy vein, and your parents say to you, I forbid you forever from ever forgiving this person. So is that something which is subject to kibbutz aim? Or do we say that this is an instruction to violate the Torah? And once again, that's not something that they're empowered to do. So that revolves around the question of just how severe this point is. Now it's interesting just to, I guess, tease a little bit Tamir's question. So the Yerushalmi in Bava Kamma has a phrase, the Motzi Shemra, Ein lo mechila alamas. There's no mechila for Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra may or may not here mean Motzi Shemra like we use it today, meaning slander, or might mean Lashon Hara in a more general sense. But there the Rishami has the statement, there's no mechila for it ever. And Magen Avraham explains, like Mefarshim explained over there, that the problem is that you can't so easily fix the damage, because it could be somebody will hear the original Motzi Shemra but won't hear the reconciliation. So that prompts the question, it's probably not the only example of an offense which you can't fix. So maybe this is just representational of the larger category of, if you've done something where the damage is such that it can't be undone, so then maybe it's legitimate for the victim to say, I'm not going to be meichel. Now still, it's going to be difficult for the world to go on that way. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that if you've seen that the person has done everything he can to try to fix things, and it's just beyond his capacity to totally fix it, but he's made a sincere effort, that maybe it's still appropriate, it's still recommended for the victim to be meichel. But it's understandable and maybe somewhat legitimate if he doesn't. So in general, there is a chakira that you could ask. There's a nice discussion about this. There's a sefer called the Reacha Kamocha. It's a red volume, has many different volumes. So in the back of one of the volumes, there's a discussion about this, about the question of how indeed do we look at mechila? Do we look at mechila like a monetary mechila, like a waiver of claims? Or do we look at it like a emotional reconciliation that doesn't really have anything to do with a monetary waiver? And he brings various rayas, but just to give two ramifications of that discussion quickly so we can catch a mincha. So one is, they say in Eitzah for Mishal Salanter, that he said that if you want to have a good Eitzah, how to not have tainas on people. So if somebody offends you, what you should do is you should be meichel right away. Because once you do that, you can't take it back. So what does he mean by that? He's comparing it to a monetary debt. If somebody owes you money, right, and you're meichel, you say it's okay, you keep the money. So you can't come back tomorrow and say, you know what, actually I need it, you have to give it to me. And once you're mochel, it's there, and the story's over. So he's assuming that mechila here is basically comparable to mechila by a monetary chov, and that if you put it into play, you can't undo it. But the truth is, if it's not so much about claims, it's more about emotional distance. So then, if the fact is that despite the statement of mechila, there is still some tension, so then there might still be a need for more of a process. Or to focus on another detail of this comparison, there's a story they used to say about the stipler. And the stipler once showed up at a bar mitzvah in Bnei Brak, totally randomly, no one knew who invited him. and he said that face 6 years earlier, he was davening in Kippur next to a 7-year-old boy, and this boy was davening out of a machzor that happened to be laid out like a gemara, like a gemara. So Steiper gave him a speech. He said that it's not a time for learning, it's a time for davening. And he didn't realize that he actually wasn't learning then, but he was davening, and the matzah looked like a gemara. So he wanted to ask for mechila for prejudging this boy. But because the kohen can't be muzzled, so then he had to wait till he was bar mitzvah, and he showed up at the bar mitzvah to ask for mechila then. So what does it mean to say a kohen can't be muzzled? It really means that monetarily a kohen can't release a monetary debt, but to say that he can't be reconciled with, that's probably not necessarily the case. So here again, he's assuming that it has a monetary connection. So the truth is, there are aspects of both, and it would make sense, especially considering just how humble this issue is, that we should be machmer for both, that we should try to make sure that all the claims against us are released, and also do what's necessary to make sure that there is a complete reconciliation, that all hostilities that are between people are addressed as well. So again, your question of Lashon Hara is a very important one. There's a lot to follow up on, so let's see if we can squeeze it in. For now, our agenda tomorrow is to start with Parsha, but we'll see how much it takes, and we'll have time to talk about some other things as well. I wish everyone a meaningful and bearable fast. It should be the tool for tshuva that it's meant to be. And God willing, as far as we know now, we will regroup here tomorrow.